Good morning. It's 6:59 and 54 degrees this morning. The temperature will go down to 40 and expect rain all day. Today is Thursday, October 29th, 2020, and you're tuned to WBAI New York. Coming up next, a new day. On the show, we welcome Shandor John, a former phone worker and union activist in the Communications Workers of America. He's been active in the faculty and staff union at the City University of New York for 17 years. We're back to talking about labor this morning and the latent power of an organized potential of a working class determined to act collectively in defense of itself and humanity. Stay tuned for headlines. I wish I could live like I'm longing to live. I wish I could do all the things that I can do, though I'm way overdue. I'd be We're having technical difficulties again, folks. This is a little frustrating, but here we are. Once again, I was talking about the COVID-19 spread when we were disconnected. But we're going to move on from that. Meanwhile, the White House Science Policy Office lists, quote, ending the COVID-19 pandemic as the top accomplishment of Donald Trump's first term, even as he continues his super COVID-19 spreader rallies. This while the U.S. sets records for new daily infections and numerous hospitals across the country, as you know, are now stretched to their breaking point, with health officials warning that things could get worse with winter coming and people spending more time indoors. Cardiologist Dr. Jonathan Reiner, professor of medicine at George Washington University, called Trump's activities at rallies leading up to the 2020 election, and I love this quote, quote, a menace to society. Let's listen.
You know, I feel like every time I see the president, he's pulling the rug out from under my feet. When I talk to patients in the office every week, I talk about not just, you know, their heart health and their heart issues, but I talk about viral safety. And I talk about masking up everywhere you go, social distancing, lowering your viral footprint. And then I look at the leader of this country completely undermining that effort, bringing thousands of people together, not socially distant, most of them without masks. That's completely counter, 180 degrees counter to the message that every health professional in the United States gives their patients. It's really a menace to society.
It's really a menace to society. I love it. Former Food and Drug Administration Chief Scott Gottlieb said on CNNBC Monday that the U.S. was at a tipping point of exponential spread in much of the country. And in other news, massive protests continue in Philadelphia after the police killing of 27-year-old Walter Wallace Jr. on Monday. Police killed Wallace outside his home and in front of his mother. Pam Africa, a longtime Philadelphia organizer and neighbor of Walter Wallace Jr., witnessed many of the events prior to the shooting on Monday. Let's listen.
I go to my door and I happen to look out. The block is full of cops. And I look, my neighbor is talking with the cops. I went back into the house and couldn't been no more than 10 minutes. I came back, all the cops was gone. But she spent a long time talking to them, telling about her son. I'm looking at my neighbor and standing in between the police and her son and begging them not to shoot her son. The community saying, this is our neighbor. We know him. Don't shoot him. Because it was obvious to everybody that they were going to kill that brother.
Police killed Wallace Jr. while he was in the midst of a mental health episode. Recent studies have shown that up to half of all people killed by police are disabled people, many of whom are put in danger when police are called because the police escalate situations of mental and emotional distress, and they escalate with violence rather than providing necessary de-escalation protocols. And as disability justice advocates point out, police have targeted black disabled people in particular. In a city with a long and storied history of both black-led radical organization and heavy police repression, this horrific shooting has led to a renewed and fierce uprising. Here's a clip of Philadelphians responding to the shooting, beginning with Walter Wallace Sr., father of Walter Wallace Jr.
And I really, if I'm a heart, feel like justice gotta be done to help my son and help my family.
I'm like very angry, but I'm also scared. I'm scared. I'm sad. You know what I'm saying? At the end of the day, all I be thinking about, like, damn, like, I don't have no kids yet. And I really want to have a kid. But one thing I refuse to do, I refuse to have a child while stuff like this is going on.
You cannot retrain hatred. You cannot retrain a man who would do what he did to Walter, who would do what he did to him. You cannot retrain that. That's a sickness that's on the inside.
Your job is to protect and serve us. Nobody got protected. This is beyond injustice. And if we stood around and we protested for George Floyd, you better believe we're going to protest for our own citizen of our neighborhoods. It has to stop now.
And police have arrested at least 100 people in the last several days in Philadelphia. But as activists have reported, and they're what they're doing is that they're hearing this on police scanners, which are publicly available. Philadelphia police have been overwhelmed by the mass turnout of folks in that city. And Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf signed a proclamation of disaster emergency to provide additional state resources to Philadelphia in response to the protests. The Pennsylvania National Guard is expected to arrive in Philadelphia on Friday, with more expected on Saturday. And we've just learned that federal agents detained Anthony Smith, a social studies teacher and one of the organizers of the Philadelphia Coalition for Racial, Economic, and Legal Justice. That's Philly for Real Justice. And he was arrested at his home Wednesday morning. His attorney, Paul Hetznecker, said as much. His arrest came just days after he was lauded in an article in Philadelphia Magazine for his activism. The prominent West Philadelphia activist is the lead plaintiff in a civil rights lawsuit over police response to racial injustice protests this spring. The activist was arrested yesterday morning, along with two others, in a case tied to those demonstrations. So this is important. This is Anthony Smith, who's been part of this recent wave of protests, and he had an ongoing civil rights suit, but now he's been arrested for something else by those federal agents that have been sweeping through the country in cities where there have been protests. And I got a text from Megan Malachi last night when I reached out to find out what was going on. Because these are folks I know, by the way, my listening audience. I spent an enormous amount of time organizing around the case of Mumia Abu-Jamal in Philadelphia and made a film that had me there every day for years. And just around the health suit of Mumia Abu-Jamal, we were fighting to save his life. So Philadelphia is like my second home, so I'm feeling everything that's going on in Philadelphia very profoundly. But we are told that the comrade was arrested again on federal charges, and he was taken to Lehigh County, which is 3 hours away from Philadelphia. And she again says that they're beyond this federal arrest, there at least 100 people have been arrested. In other important news, because we have to move on, and we got stuck there for a minute. I didn't realize that I was not on the air, but this is very important news for those of you who might be applying for unemployment benefits. So listen up. If you've applied for unemployment benefits or are going to, New Yorkers, this is a call by the City Scoop newspaper, which is phenomenal, by the way. New Yorkers, did you know that if you think you're out of unemployment benefits, the good news is you're probably not. for those receiving traditional unemployment, unemployed workers can get 33 extra weeks of benefits during the pandemic on top of the initial 26. So the number of weeks these workers can receive benefits is 59 total weeks. Those are workers who are applying for traditional unemployment. If you're receiving the special pandemic unemployment assistance, that's known as PUA, which is open to a wider group of workers who cannot receive traditional unemployment insurance, these pandemic unemployed assistant benefits offer a total of 46 weeks. But here's the confusing part. According to Farrell Brody, a workers' rights attorney at Take Root Justice, some users' online accounts are saying they are out of eligible days to receive benefits. And this is leading to confusion and making it hard to know whether someone should continue to recertify for benefits. If your, quote, effective days remaining, unquote, is zero, if this is what you get when you go to the computer to recertify, it, and it says effective days remaining is zero, or if the computer says that you've reached zero, the State Department of Labor says, don't worry. Traditional UI and PUA benefits have been extended for New Yorkers. When your effective days remaining reaches zero during your benefit year, you do not need to reapply or contact the New York Department of Labor. Just continue to recertify weekly while you are unemployed. For more information, you should go to http://on.ny.gov/P=EUCBoy. I will repeat that. on.ny.gov/PPAUL EUCBoy. Okay, or you can email me for more on this information on these details. Very important for folks who need the support at this moment. And we all pay taxes. So I'd rather taxes, we want our taxes to go to redistributing wealth in this country. It's 7:22 and you're tuned to non-commercial listener sponsored free speech. WBAI at 99.5 FM in New York. I'm Johanna Fernandez with A New Day.
Hero, I see your light in the dark, smile in my face when we all know it's hard. There's no way to ever pay you back. Bless your heart, no, I love you for that. Honest and selfless, I don't know if this helps it, but good job, you're doing a good job, a good job. Doing a good job, don't get too down. The world needs you now. Know that you matter, 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 yeah. You're doing a good job, a good job. You're doing a good job, don't get too down. The world needs you now. Know that you matter, 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 yeah. Six in the morning, as soon as you walk through that door, everyone needs you again. The world's out of order. it's not a sound when you're not around. All day on your feet, hard to keep that energy. I know when it feels like the end of the road, you don't let go, you just press forward. You're the engine that makes all things go. Always in disguise, my hero. I see a light in the dark. Smile at my face when we all know it's hard. There's no way to ever pay you back. Bless your heart, no, I love you for that. Honest and selfless. I don't know if this helps it, but good job. You're doing a good job.
And that was Good Job by Alicia Keys. This is her ode to essential workers. I really like this song, everybody. Yesterday, we heard from callers on the power of labor and the state of the unions. One caller explained that the first thing UPS workers are told when they're hired is to not join the union. And I wonder why. Makes me strike the pose of the emoji that's scratching its chin and furrowing its brow. You know that emoji? I love that one. That one's one of my favorites. Despite the pressure tactics UPS imposes on its new employees, unionized workers across the country appreciate the importance of their union, even if they acknowledge that things could be better. This is the sense we got from Denise, another one of our callers yesterday. But still, today's unions are in crisis. Trey, yet another caller yesterday, said that he doesn't know what, but we got to do something for the working class to save ourselves. In the mid-1950s, a third of American workers belonged to a labor union. Now only 10.7 of all workers are unionized. That's 1 out of 10. Are members of unions, of a union. The rate of unionization in the private sector is pretty low. Only 6.4% of private sector workers are unionized. And consequences are grave. Experts say that a third of the increase in inequality in the United States is due to the gradual decline of union membership over the last four decades. Here to join us and speak about labor, we welcome Shandor John to the show. Shandor is a former phone worker and union activist in the Communications Workers of America. And for the past 17 years, he's been active in the faculty and staff union at the City University of New York. Shandor forms part of a group called Class Struggle Education Workers, and he works closely with the internationalist clubs at the City University of New York. Shandor, welcome to the show.
Hi, Johanna. Good morning.
Good morning. Okay, so it's 7:29, everybody, and we've had a rough go at this show. So I want to ask you a question that'll make both of us happy. what's one of your favorite moments in working class history?
Oh, well, the sit-down strikes at General Motors is one of the favorite moments of a lot of people that look at working class history.
That's my favorite moment, too, so tell us about it.
Well, workers got sick and tired of being sped up, underpaid, mistreated, disrespected, lied to, beat up by goons, and they decided to exercise the power to withhold their labor. And in the face of the strike breakers and the cops, they took over the factory. They occupied it.
And
then when the goons, well, let me just say one other thing. When the goons tried to break in and the cops tried to break in, the Women's Emergency Brigade, led by a radical activist, a Trotskyist activist, Janora Dollinger, beat the crap out of the scabs and saved the day.
Now, did the women arm themselves?
Yep.
Isn't that
amazing?
They had
axe handles.
They had what?
Axe handles.
Right. Okay, so can you tell us a little bit about this new strategy known as the sit-down strike? And I want you to tell us this because when people think of the sit-down, they think about sit-ins in the civil rights movement. But in fact, the sit-ins as a strategy during the civil rights movement was drawn from this new strategy that developed within the labor movement in the 1930s. Tell us about that.
Well, basically, this was a deliberate violation of the sacred right of private property, which is so dear, you know, to the hearts of capitalists everywhere. But the workers were the ones that knew the machines, and they knew how to run the machines, and they knew that if they sat in and stood guard over those machines, that that would give some pause or could give some pause to those, you know, capitalists who believe that the machines, of course, were much more valuable than any human. And basically, this was something that they used to multiply their power of withholding their labor. And as a foam worker, I remember we advocated sit-down strikes during, for example, the 1983 foam strike, where we had to face off against violent scabs and the cops, where one of my comrades, who was a former Black Panther, was framed up for defending a picket line against a racist manager. But we advocated that we take a page out of the sit-down strike book and do something that had happened in British Columbia, Canada, where phone workers occupied a central office and they balanced some buckets of water over those expensive computers. And they explained that it would be a terrible shame if any of that water accidentally spilled on those valuable machines if anybody tried to bust in and arrest them.
Wow.
Oh, and the other thing is that we said that we would turn off the billing tapes at that time. There were still billing tapes. We would turn those off for all the working class and poor people in Oakland, California. But we would not turn off the billing tapes, of course, for the banks and insurance companies and real estate speculators. The type of people that run the city we live in here in New York.
What are the billing tapes? For those of us who have no idea what the hell you're talking about, sir.
Just where your phone bill would come from. You get free, we were saying we would have free phone service. We'd have free phone service for the working people, but we would sure as hell not quit billing the exploiters.
Wow, that's a pretty amazing story. And this is in California that you were engaged in a strike?
Yeah, this is something we advocated. We didn't succeed in getting that pushed through.
In the 1980s.
This is a pretty radical situation right then. We did some interesting stuff to support the leftist insurgents in El Salvador and the film workers in El Salvador that had occupied their main telephone central building, including a lot of women workers in San Salvador, against the military dictatorship for 52 days. And they called us up and asked for help. And, you know, we did everything that we could to help them out.
And what ended up happening with the workers in California, in Canada?
They won. Oh, yeah.
Oh, they won. Those were the workers who threatened to pour water into the whole apparatus?
Oh, they didn't make any such threat. They just said it would be a terrible shame if some of that water accidentally spilled in, if some scab or cop tried to come busting in there. You know, they love those machines.
That's so beautiful. And I'm Johanna Fernandez, and I'm speaking to Shandor John about labor, and you're listening to WBAI in New York. So can you tell us, why is the working class unable to act in its own interest today? And I know that's a complicated, multi-pronged question. Go ahead.
I guess I would have to say that I think the working class is able to act in its own interest. And in recent years, we've seen immigrant workers with no papers and under the threat of deportation, organizing unions in warehouses in Brooklyn and at the hot and crusty restaurant near Hunter College, and being really brave, you know, in taking those risks and asserting their power. And we have seen, you know, longshore workers out on the West Coast shut down all 29 ports on Juneteenth against police terror and endemic racism. But the working class needs to assert that power a lot more and to carry out a massive organizing drive, a huge organizing drive to bring in those workers that are not part of that 10.7% that are in unions right now. And that's going to take class struggle tactics, and it also is going to mean unchaining that power from the Democratic Party, which is the main mechanism subordinating the labor movement to the capitalist state. And that's more urgent than ever. Just to defend our most basic rights, that power needs to be unchained. And the labor bureaucracy, what we call the labor bureaucracy, that sits on top of the unions, is the transmission belt, basically, for subordinating the working class and its incredible potential power, to the government and its institutions and its laws, like the Taylor Law here in New York. So I think a lot of this has to do with the fundamental political questions of what class consciousness and class independence mean. If you have, one hand tied behind your back, let alone both, then it's very, very hard to exert that power. And all the unions were built by breaking laws that were designed to stop the workers from defending their interests.
Right.
And one other thing I would just say is the fight to throw the cops of all kinds, all forms of police and repressive apparatus, the police, the prison guards, security guards, throw them out of the unions and to unleash that power of the working class in the fight against racism, right, and racist police terror and all forms of oppression. That's really key right now, even more than it has always been key, but we can say it's more urgent than ever right now.
Okay, so you are raising all of the issues that our callers raised yesterday. One of our callers suggested that, it's illegal to go out on strike in New York. What is your argument? Can you flesh out your response to suggestions that we can't do something because it's illegal? I mean, the sit-down strike was hugely illegal, and we won.
Sure. Well, there's a reason why they try to make it illegal. The things that work are very frequently illegal, and the things that have to be done are frequently illegal. It used to be illegal to even have a union, or sometimes even to talk about a union. You know, the miners like the Molly Maguires got hanged for talking union. It was illegal to ride in the front of the bus. It was illegal for women to vote. And it was illegal to go on strike. Those sit-down strikes were sure as hell illegal, but it's a question of power. The only way to defeat those laws is to exercise the power that those laws are meant to restrain. If we bow down in front of those laws, then things are going to keep getting worse. So it really is a question of power. Like at the City University of New York, we need to prepare and organize a strike. It's really bad. There's 2,900 adjuncts were laid off at the end of the last semester. There's new cuts and new layoffs and terrible conditions for students, which is the daughters and the sons of the working class. And a lot of immigrant families put their hopes in the, first kid in their family to go to college. And that's all under threat right now. And now they're saying that there's going to be new cuts in the spring. But it's illegal for us to go on strike because we're public employees. How's that for democracy? And that law has been applied and enforced by both the Democratic and Republican parties, which we never should forget. With all people trying to push illusions, you know, in the boss parties and their candidates. But
so,
to win, we have to bring in other sectors of the working class in this city, you know, who make the city run. And to bring in large numbers of students and members of oppressed communities who have a stake in this.
So earlier you said that the Democrats and the union bureaucracy subordinates the working class to the capitalist class, to the bosses. How exactly does that happen?
Well, really good example is the Taylor Law. So the Taylor Law is this law saying that public employees in the state of New York, it's a state law, that public employees in the state of New York are prohibited from going on strike or having any job action, you know? Like if we all coughed in unison or held our breath for 10 minutes, well, we can't do that, but whatever. If we did any kind of job action, right, that's illegal. So when the transport workers, Local 100, went on strike in 2005 and the city largely came to a halt, right, the Taylor Law was invoked by Michael Bloomberg, the mayor, and enforced by the attorney general, a Democrat by the name of Elliot Spitzer. When our union, the Professional Staff Congress, and I'm speaking as a rank and file member, not in any official capacity, let me just be clear on that, when our union sued CUNY because CUNY is hiding millions of dollars in CARES Act money and won't even say what it's not spending, what it's spending or not spending it on, right? Millions. Who represented CUNY against us? Letitia James, progressive Democrat, state attorney general. Okay. And so to, you know, in terms of the laws, in terms of the state apparatus, in terms of also who are the mayors who are, mayoring over the cities, the large cities with racist police terror, right, against the black population, largely Democratic mayors, and they use their cops against militant strikes. What we need is to break from those parties, and the working class needs to have its own political party, a workers' party. And that's a fundamental step for organizing. Who was it that went out and organized those unions in the 1930s? It was the Reds, you know, communists, socialists, Trotskyists, even a sprinkling of anarchists and anarcho-syndicalists, right? People who understood, at least in some way, you know, that it was a class struggle and that those on the other side have their representatives and their courts and their parties, right? And I think that all of those mechanisms are enforced by both of the bosses' party, and particularly the Democratic Party, which pretends to somehow, sometimes they pretend when they think it'll catch some votes, to be supposedly pro-labor, you know. I think that break is crucial.
And Shandor, a part of what we see happening in the 1930s is that the depression and the suffering that came out of the depression really exposed the contradictions of capitalism. The fact that literally the government was throwing grain into the ocean while people were going hungry and slaughtering millions of pigs while there were bread lines across the country. That really opened up the possibility to not just stare at the horror and the contradictions of capitalism, but to do something about it. And that's where organization was so important. But I want to go back to the CARES Act, because I'd like to remind our listening audience that was part of the stimulus package that gave employers funds, especially if they promised not to fire workers.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
So CUNY, of which I'm a part, took the money, ensconced the money, hid it somewhere, and then it fired all of these adjuncts. I mean, it's disgusting. And this is the City University of New York, the university that's supposed to educate the new emerging working class of New York City with accessible and top-notch education. Now, I'd like to ask our listening audience to call in with questions. The number to call is 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. Once again, that's 212-209-2877. The question of the police was raised yesterday. I don't even want to talk about it. Why are the police not our friends? And why do we need to get rid of them in the union movement especially?
The great 1934 general strike in San Francisco, which established the West Coast Longshore Union as a major power, was touched off in large part by the police shooting down in cold blood, striking longshore workers, two of whom died on Bloody Thursday in July of 1934. The same police that routinely carry out racist murders against African-American people in city after city throughout this country unendingly are the professionals of repression and strike breaking. When I was on strike at the telephone company, the cops escorted the scabs through the picket lines. And when scabs ran vans up, crashing vans into some of our comrades on the picket lines, of course the cops, you know, stood by. But if a worker used his picket sign to slow down a truck or anything else that was, if they decided to deem it illegal, they would be busted. The police are professionals of repression. They come out of the slave patrols, as we all know, right? They have absolutely no place in the movement of the oppressed and exploited. They are hirelings of the oppressors and exploiters, all forms of cops. Right. And in Brazil, my comrades there in the city of Volta Redonda, which is the steel city of Brazil, largely black steel workers led a fight to throw the municipal police out of the municipal workers union. And they carried that struggle through. And that was really a beacon. It's a scandal and it's a disgrace that people whose job is to lock up poor people, break strikes, carry out repression in the service of the master class, are members of labor unions. And I'm not just talking about the so-called cop unions, which obviously need to be expelled from every, you know, labor federation, AFL-CIO and municipal labor councils or whatever, but the cops, prison guards, security guards, who are members of legitimate unions, of other unions that actually do group together workers, but which have this, if you like, well, I don't want to say fifth column, but some people might call it something along those lines. And if you look at the contracts, it says if the union that we're in goes on strike, we agree to carry out our duties against the strike, right? In defense of the employer's, you know, property rights.
So right.
It's clear.
We've got two callers, and callers, we're taking more calls. 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. Caller, you're on the line. Tell us your name and where you're calling from.
Hello, am I on there?
Yes, you are.
Hi there. So, introduce myself. My name is Derek, and I've been in the, you know, I'm Afro-American. I've been working in the private sector like over 20 years, always, basically almost always in unions. I've been at, you know, contract committees, bargaining table, all of that, right? I've been in arbitration. I was on the executive council of one of my locals. So, you know, I have a point of correction. You know, it was not UPS that gives the whole thing about, you know, you can't be in a union because UPS is organized, if you mean, you know, the United Parcel Post and the Post Office, FedEx that does that, and also Whole Foods.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So, but my thing is like, you know, you know, we can say, yeah, you have to break the laws and all of that. And, you know, I'm saying, you know, not just because something is illegal, I'm not saying you shouldn't do it. But having been in the private sector, you have to realize that, you know, union organizing is very expensive. Okay, that's one thing. I've seen, okay, the books, and it's just expensive. And, you know, in the private sector, I mean, it's a matter of resources after a certain point. Now, strikes aren't illegal, but what happens is they just fire people, and that very often just kills the union drive.
You the know, efforts.
That's sort of and the mm-hmm. third thing. Can we stop talking about the working class? You have working classes. You have working people. This is not you talk about like there's a unified entity called the working class walking around, you know, and there isn't. You know, so and in terminology, the other thing with generally with the left, you know, then I'll get off. You know, you need to pick enemies. Right? That's how you mobilize people. The right wing does this. That's what Trump does all the time. He gets up there and every time he talks, he gives someone, you know, he gives them an enemy. And you need to pick enemies and stop, you know, the police are the tools of the capitalist class. No. Come up with something else. You know, do talk about the ruling class, put faces on it, institutions, what they do and how they mess people over. Okay?
Cause Derek, thank you very much.
Right?
We have to take another call. Thank you.
Do you want to
take that before we go to another caller, or should I take another caller?
Sure. Up to you, but I could say real quickly.
Go ahead. Yes, let's address that.
I'm glad that Derek mentioned Whole Foods, because I have some friends out on the West Coast in Whole Foods who've been engaged in a struggle, just to the right to wear a button, with the slogan. That they're defending the right to wear a button of fellow workers with the slogan of the company, the hypocritical slogan that the company says racism has no place here. They say that. But when the workers wear buttons with that slogan, they are disciplined and they are lined up to try to make them not have a union. I think that, you know, when Derek is quite right, that when there's firings to try to stop a union drive, sometimes that can squelch the union drive. That's why solidarity is so important, to have the rest of the labor movement, and particularly its key sectors, you know, conscious to mobilize their power to come on down to the picket line and help win. Lastly, the thing is, like, it's not so much a matter of picking enemies, that the enemies of the oppressed pick their targets. They're the ones picking the targets. We just have to be conscious of it. I think that the working class is not united, and it's not going to be automatically united. I think that the struggles against oppression, the struggle against racism, the struggle for full citizenship rights for immigrants, for women's rights, these struggles are key to uniting the working class, which is a question of class consciousness. But I think there is, objectively, a class of people who live by selling their labor, and it's the majority. We need to use that power.
I have, well, let's take a caller. Caller, you're on the line, your name and where you're calling from.
Good morning. This is Saul, calling from Richmond Hill.
Saul, and speak a little louder, please. Thanks.
This is Saul, calling from Richmond Hill.
Yes.
Okay. What the gentleman said earlier, not only do you have to pick your enemies, when you have an election like what's going on now, you have to also decide, even though you don't like both candidates, which one would you rather advocate under while they're in office so that you can get what you need and organize and educate your masses behind that. Secondly, there's a tactic, and we did it as transit workers. It's called work by the book. If you drive in a train, trains tend to break the speed signs on a regular day to be on time. But you basically, it's a law. You got to follow those speed signs. You follow all those signs, it becomes to a point where everything slows down. And it is a job action, but they can't do anything about it because you're obeying the rules. You work by the book. Number three, this is a call to action, everyone, because I've written several people with BAI about this. Because you, for example, the host today, she's talking about, well, they fired some adjuncts. Well, you have to go to civil court. They have taken over the civil court. I've called about this before. There's a judge in Queens that's running that needs to be brought off. Her name is Tracy Capitano Fox. There is a working party's family candidate running against her. And I called and told you that this woman accepts perjured testimony. She sides against the masses. She also sides for big business. You're a working person. You should be willing to rag her out and get everybody out because she's in Queens. And basically, she violates the law when she does things. Okay? We need to do this. We need to strategically look at things and realize the name of the game is chess, not checkers. And I'm for it now. You want to go against the cops? Rag them out and tell them, hey, listen, your union boss is supposed to be looking out for your pocket. You know, in this city, the greatest thing is we have about 7 big parades, and they make a lot of overtime. Well, they haven't been made that overtime. And the idiot who's the head of their union, that I call the Grand Dragon of the PBA, well, he supports the guy that broke the world and made sure they don't get paid. And you need to remind every policeman, look at what you're supporting. You're supporting making yourself bankrupt. And a lot of times I did that. I did that at a protest. The sergeant made everybody stay away from me because they were thinking of walking off and not being out there.
Saul, thank you so very much. I have a message also from someone who's saying, I'm always confounded that the UFT, one of my unions, is always confirming and backing the most conservative of all the Democrats. The most conservative of all the Democrats, it can dig out, and it does this every time. Okie doke. Shandor, what's your response to this? To Saul, and Judith Ackerman is the other person who sent the message.
Well, what Saul was saying about work to rule is another way of putting it. That's true, and sometimes that can be a useful tactic. And it depends on the particular industry, and it depends on the gravity of the situation, and it depends on the tactics that the workers want to use to apply their power to the utmost. I think that, in terms of the other argument, when I was a little kid, I think maybe the first political thing I did was I was in a family with a lot of people from the left, from the CP in particular. And basically they said that the Communist Party. I was brought up not to say it out loud because of McCarthyism. They used to come visit our FBI used to come visit our house and threaten my mother with deportation because of her alleged associations, the Communist Party. And so we were told, we have to stop Goldwater, which meant vote for Lyndon B. Johnson. And I made a hand-scrawled little thing saying stop Goldwater and taped it up to some telephone poles in my neighborhood. Johnson was elected. Allegedly, he was not going to escalate a war that very few people had heard about called the War in Vietnam. Soon enough, he staged a Tonkin Gulf incident and escalated the war to mass genocide of millions of people in Vietnam. And he was supposedly the lesser evil. So I don't want to support the party of Hiroshima, Nagasaki, Vietnam, and a drive for war against China and all the rest of it, and mass incarceration. The working class needs to finally break free of this infernal cycle in which we are always chained to the exploiting class. And that's an elementary step, which is deeply linked, in my opinion, to the need for a mass organizing drive. Because that mass organizing drive can unleash explosive potential among the people who are essential to this society, but treated as disposable. Many of whom, undocumented workers, are not even allowed to vote, right, in this country. Okay.
We've got about 30 seconds.
So I think that this issue of the working class standing up and asserting its own interests and those of all the oppressed is absolutely crucial for the survival of us all and our rights, especially now.
Shandor, we've got so many more callers, and I'd like to invite you here to talk to us some more. Thank you so very much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
That's the end of our show for today. You've been listening to non-commercial, listener-funded Free Speech Radio, WBAI at 99.5 FM in New York. This show is produced by Ajamo Sankofa, Ellis Maxwell, Andrea Hidalgo, and Craig Bahia. Michael G. Haskins is our board operator. We leave you with Work by Charlotte Day Wilson. I'm your host, Johanna Fernandez. Thanks for tuning in to A New Day. See you next week.
It's gonna take a bit of work.
and you're listening to WBAI.